welcome to Sailing Through Life, a show where we set sail on the journey to health, happiness, and living your dreams. Discover ways to take care of yourself, find the positive in life, and continue to find strength, even when going through some of life's most challenging times. I'm Lori, your host and friend on this journey. Join me along with my inspiring guests as we share stories that give you hope, passion, and a vision to live a more fulfilled life. It's time to feel empowered. It's time to make every choice count. Welcome aboard. What is the secret recipe for reversing chronic disease, looking and feeling better, and most important, creating sustainable health habits? Eating healthy is exceptionally delicious with my guest and healthy gal, Lynn Bowman. She is wise and witty and has created a whole food, plant-based, and practical way of eating. This holistic approach is what has helped Lynn to overcome her own health issues. Lynn was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes in 1986. Through her understanding of the importance of food and modifying her lifestyle, she became living proof that you can cook, eat, sleep, and walk your way out of type 2 diabetes, or at least the ill effects of it. In addition, the benefits extend to aging well and looking fantastic. In her new book, Brownies for Breakfast, she takes us through her healthy galley and shares exactly how you can do it too. It's a wonderful feast for the eyes as well. Would you ever think about eating brownies for breakfast? Probably not, but you may rethink that after hearing this episode.
When you allow yourself mentally and physically to eat high quality food, it changes your relationship with food. If you sit down to a table full of green and yellow and pink and red and orange and beautiful foods with beautiful fragrance and textures, and you say to yourself, well, I'm going to eat whatever I want, and I get to eat whatever I want, suddenly now, not only is the food healthy, but your relationship with that food becomes healthy. That's huge.
In my conversation with Lynn, we're going to be talking about reversing chronic disease through lifestyle changes, her secret to aging well, and healthy habits that you can really keep. Please welcome Lynn. Hello, Lynn. Thank you for joining me today.
I am so happy to join you, and I never get over how sweet it is to talk to people from across the country.
So I'm so grateful that I've been able to meet so many wonderful people this way. And especially today with this topic, I know it's how important it is to you. And I wanted to share this because I think it's so important for people to understand how everything is interconnected. Your mind, yes. Your body, your spirit, all that plays into how you feel and what happens to you in your life and how you can use those things to better your life if you focus on and pay attention to what your body is telling you.
Yes. And it's simple. Most of it is just really simple. If you can kind of get past the why, all of the cellular research and all that sort of thing. And what I do is very science-based. I try hard not to talk about anything that doesn't have good data behind it. But my focus is on how. What do you do? How do you take this information and turn it into habits and things that you can do every day or most days and put it to work for you? Because it does work. It really does make a difference in every aspect of your life. And as we've talked about, Lori, that if you're not in reasonably good health, if you don't have some energy, if you can't move your body, and it's caused by something that is preventable or reversible, let's fix it. Let's do it.
I think people get overwhelmed, though. That's the problem, is people get overwhelmed with all the information and where to start. The simplest thing is just to pick one thing and get yourself squared away on that one thing and then build on it.
Absolutely. And it's so easy to turn off about it, because when we talk about something as essential to everyday life, as ordinary as eating, how you eat, you know, we're attached to it. It's hard to hear that you need to change something. And if you can get past that to, okay, well, it's going to do something good for me. Okay, what? What do I do? And as you know, I've got some simple, I won't even call them tricks. They're just different ways of doing what you do every day that some will make it easier. Also, it's going to save money. It's going to cost you less. Mm-hmm. It's going to mean less packaging, which many of us understand how valuable that is now, that we need to just be putting less plastic and crap out in the universe. Sourcing your food different places than maybe you have been sourcing your food, which also is a big, huge change in getting rid of pollution.
Health issues and, you know, the pollution, yes, and the air we breathe and what we're putting, yes, into the soil that we're supposed to be growing healthy vegetables and fruits in is now polluted. And it's not meant to be a struggle for you to do this. It's meant to be sustainable. It's meant to be able to actually live it and not just do it. And so that's where I think the big difference is on, you know, what you're doing is you're not just like, here's the parameters and this is what you do. No, it's a lifestyle change. And that's the important part, is it's an across the board influence on your whole body.
Yes. And people ask me, do I journal? Do I count calories? Do I count carbs? So no, I don't do any of that. That all just seems like homework to me. And I think, I mean, it can be a good tool if you're really trying to make an analysis of what you're eating. That's all great. What I tell people and what I do myself is, if you are eating quality food, if you are eating whole foods and mostly plant-based foods, you can pretty much eat as much as you want. You know, you don't have to count stuff, mm-hmm, because all of that excess sodium that your doctor has said you can't have, that's in packaged foods, right, primarily. If you're actually just sprinkling salt grains on your food to make it taste better, it's hard to sprinkle enough on your food to make it add up to 2,000 milligrams a day or whatever. Yeah. It just doesn't. But if you eat half a package of Doritos, right, you're going to be, yeah, way,
you'll get there pretty quick. Yeah.
You'll get there really quick. So I think it's much easier and gentler on our souls to just think in terms of, everything I put in my body, I want to be quality. I want it to be good. I want it to be nourishing. So, and it's really not that hard to figure out what is good food, what's nourishing food. And I've also shared with readers and listeners the idea of, people think granola, you know, that's healthy. I made it my work one day to go down the entire cereal aisle and look at every single package of granola to see what was in it.
Were you disappointed?
Let's just say that there was not a single package that didn't have sugar, refined sugar in it. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, going back to the basics of how to eat, sugar is a big one that just needs to come out of your diet. It's so data driven, the problems that sugar, and when I say sugar, I mean primarily refined cane sugar, but anything that's kind of sugar-like that can that is high on the glycemic index, mm-hmm, let's say. And for those of you who are not familiar with that, a glycemic index is how we measure our glucose response to foods. So foods that give us a spike in our blood sugar are high on the glycemic index, and foods that don't spike are low. And so anything, and people say, well, maple syrup is healthy. I'm sorry. It's delicious. It smells good, but it's going to give you a huge spike in your, right, blood glucose. So, and honey, you know, it's sugar. So when we say get sugar out of your life, I mean anything that is what you now know as sugar or healthy sweetener. What I would like you to try are things like monk fruit, which is fairly new in the marketplace. It's a fruit ground up, and it does not affect your blood sugar. You can sweeten the heck out of whatever you want to with monk fruit, and you will not get a blood glucose response. No calories. So hello, look it up. Especially if you think you're diabetic or pre-diabetic or concerned, mm-hmm, for someone in your family, look any of these things up until you know, until you've got it pretty much understood that, and a thing I talk about all the time, I dedicate a couple of pages in my new book to this, is read the label.
Yes.
You really must read the label. I don't care how many times on the cover of that thing they say healthy, whole grain, you know, whatever, whatever.
Organic, yeah.
Organic. Read that label, and I'll bet you there's going to be sugar in it, and it could be in two or three different forms. So they don't, that means they don't have to put it up on top. They right. can put it as the third ingredient, as the fifth ingredient, as the seventh ingredient, but it all adds up to a big fat spike in your blood glucose.
And that's a horrible feeling too, when you're, you know, you think you're eating right, and yeah. then you get a reaction to something you eat. And I think it's paying attention to the signals that your body gives you. You know, if you eat something and you can trace it back to what it was, that helps you kind of narrow a lot of that down. But even with what you're doing, you're giving a pretty much flat out, here, don't do this, and yeah. here's what works, and here's what'll prevent that, and this is what'll help you feel healthier, and not even having to subject yourself to feeling that ill feeling that you get after you eat something bad.
Well, and here's the sneaky thing. Diabetes does not have symptoms, and you will not feel bad when you're doing the things that are harmful to you, particularly as a diabetic. And this actually applies to everyone across the board. I mean, diabetics should pay more attention, closer attention, because they're further down that line. But the thing is that I would like to see people change. So many people are not diagnosed until they're in their 50s, 60s, 70s, because they don't have symptoms. So by the time you're diagnosed, you have had really a lot of internal damage from this diabetes. So your liver is affected, your kidneys affected, your arteries are affected, your whole system is affected by this excess glucose circulating in your blood for all these years. And again, I'm not in the business of the cellular, I'm not an MD, that's not typically what I talk about. I talk about how to fix it. And right. number one, how to fix it is stop eating sugar. And people say, well, baby steps. No, no, no. I want you to stop, because you're going to find out very quickly a couple things. Going back to the how you feel issue, you will have more energy. Mm-hmm. You will not have crashes. You will not be wrecking your teeth, which you don't feel right away. But in the second or third visit you have with your dentist after you quit sugar, your dentist may say, hey, we're doing really well. People don't realize that as they carry their Frappuccino coffee around, you know, the kind with the foam on top and all the stuff inside, you're wrecking your teeth. Mm-hmm. You're ruining your gums, because you're holding sugar against your teeth and gums all day at your desk, in the car, in your truck. That's sugar you're holding in your mouth. And I like to tell the story too of my friend Lisa and I deciding that we're going to open a cafe in my little town, Pescadero. And so we took a class on how to open a cafe. And the guy said, he started the class with, look, you think you're here to learn how to make coffee for people? He said, no, you're not going to be in the coffee business. You're in the sugar and milk business. And I Lisa, and I, whoa. But think about that.
Yeah. Because
another thing that if I said, okay, number one, quit sugar. Number two, if you want to start feeling way better, here's again, feeling better immediately and possibly fixing some of the things that you think are wrong with your digestive system or whatever. The second thing that I would highly recommend you do today, quit dairy. No dairy. And of course, people are out there listening going, what?
Mm-hmm. I'm one of them.
How can you even do that? How can you even suggest that? And this from a person, I mean, I've lived in France. I love a fabulous crafted cheese, you know, but Americans are eating dairy all day, every day. And they're eating meat and bread and dairy. That's their diet. And dairy disagrees with most of us to some level or another. And you don't even realize until you quit dairy how good you can feel. Mm. So I would challenge anybody listening, okay, you think I'm wrong? All right. try it.
Right.
Try it for 3 weeks. And you will also, if your parents, you may know that now pediatricians are starting to say, take him off milk. Just stop the milk. Stop the dairy products. And kids, suddenly their problems, digestive problems, their pooping problems, that all clears up. Your skin will clear up. People who are having really difficult times with various skin problems, sometimes the cure is as simple as just quit dairy. And you may be thinking as you hear this, yeah, but cows, healthy. Okay, the cows that are making the milk and dairy that you're eating are not healthy, good, happy cows. And what you're drinking or eating when you are drinking or eating dairy today is not something that just comes out of a cow and goes into your body. It goes through a process that includes all kinds of chemicals. That cow has been taking antibiotics its whole little life, and then you drink them or eat them in your ice cream.
Yeah. You know, that's something that you try so hard to do the right thing and eat the right things, and it still bites you because there's all the stuff that you're oblivious to that's happening to these items of food that you think are good.
And I like to talk about the fact that so much of the food that we're eating now in our cars as we drive along is designed by engineers, food engineers, whose entire purpose is making these foods more craveable. They are craveability designers. And so that package of chips, of Doritos, of whatever, has been designed specifically to make you want more. And again, look it up. I'm not making this stuff up. You know, the data is out there. The information is out there.
Yeah, and it's just mind-boggling. Somebody's getting paid to entice somebody to eat something that is destructive to them and will cause long-term effects because it retrains your brain to it's like an addiction of sorts.
It is an addiction. In fact, sugar is more addictive than heroin. Pizza is the most addictive food you can eat. And again, there's data for that. White processed flour is highly addictive because actually on the glycemic index, it's up there with sugar. So is rice.
Wow.
But the packaged foods that you're eating, particularly the ones that say on the front, you'll love this stuff. It's got whole grain. It's healthy. And so it has been designed for craveability, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. So you literally can't stop eating it. So when you make the switch to whole foods and you're scratching your heads going, okay, no sugar, no dairy. I don't want to live anymore. Really, stay with me. You do. It's okay. When you make the switch, your body adjusts in a number of ways. And one of the interesting ways that it will adjust is your saliva actually changes. Did you know that?
No.
Your saliva changes so that things that used to taste good to you may not still taste good to you. And because I've been on this quest for a long time, I can't eat sugary things. They don't taste good to me. They make me thirsty. They're way oversweet. I don't want them. I can't eat packaged potato chips. They taste awful to me. They just don't taste good. And it's chemical.
Right.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. It's chemical. And so what you do when you make the switch is, yes, you are retraining your body, but you're also just allowing your body to recover the same way an addict from anything has to chemically recover. It's the more I've studied this, the more it's just so fascinating. But of course, the most fascinating thing of all is how can we allow these things to just keep wrecking our health? Something like 80% of the people in this country have a chronic disease that is largely preventable and food driven. How about that?
And you see it. You see the people that are going to fast food restaurants, and you know, you can visually see how that's affecting their lives.
Yes.
You see that, you know, the ads on TV, and which I don't really watch, but you know, you just, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Everywhere you turn, there's a fast food restaurant. There's, like you said, the displays in the grocery store, you know, it's marketing, and they're putting things out there so that it's appealing for people. And but it's just so disheartening to see that the goal is the selling the product over the health and well-being of
yes.
people.
But another reality that plays into this is, and I'll refer to moms because I'm one and I'm a grandma and that's what I know, but this is applies to many dads as well. We are all overwhelmed. We have way too much on our plates. All these crazy expectations that we are placing on ourselves that actually mean that we are spending our lives in cars mm-hmm. eating crap out of paper bags. Because the thing that has gone by the wayside is one of the most basic things to our health and happiness, and that's food. Eating with our families, eating with our friends, eating real food and staying healthy. That's what has gone out of the wagon, and I would like that to get back in the wagon. I think it's, I mean, and you maybe can't do it, of course. I don't even think people need three meals a day, frankly. I know I don't. But you could aim for one, and it doesn't have to be with a bunch of people, but with somebody. I don't think it's healthy. And there's data for this, for us to eat alone. And I really encourage people to find ways to eat together.
Do you think it has to do with being mindful of what you're doing when you're alone? You just kind of zone and just really pay attention?
You eat differently when you eat alone. Absolutely. I mean, who doesn't know that? If we could peek at what people are narfing down on their couch as they watch the third rerun of, you know, whatever it is, you know, you're not, you just want it done. You know, you want it easy. You don't, you have other sure. things. You think. And suddenly if there's someone across the table from you, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're being held accountable all of a sudden.
Well, and you're eating more slowly and you're talking and someone's eyes are on your food and your eyes are on their food. Yes, all that. All of that. And so what I try and get people to do, and you know, we've talked about, okay, dump sugar. Absolutely. Number one. Number two, dump dairy. Forget about it. I don't ask people to quit meat, but what I do ask people to seriously consider doing is if you're going to eat meat, make sure that that cow or that pig or that lamb had a decent life on a hillside and ate good food before you ate them. That's a moral thing to many people, but it's also simply good health because if that animal has been eating crap and treated badly, that goes into your body and it makes a difference. So try and get grass-fed, pasture-finished animals to eat. And it makes a huge difference in the taste and in the amount of fat and in the type of fat. But when I saw actually the data at a recent conference that I went to a couple of years ago that made me change my whole book. I had the book Brownies for Breakfast about half written, and I went to a conference with the Plantricians, which is a group of MDs from all over the world, 1,000 doctors from all over the world, including some names you might know, T. Colin Campbell and Dean Ornish, people who've been in the reversing chronic disease business for a while. And the data is overwhelming that if you want to live longer, healthier, better, you should really consider going vegetarian.
Really?
And if not, vegan. And I myself eat fish. I will eat salmon, and I live on the coast. We get good, healthy, wild-caught fish here. If you can get red meat, particularly out of your diet. And another thing I learned, which was kind of shocking, and it seems to shock other people, is, well, what about poultry? Because we've always said, well, yeah, well, chicken, you know, that's if you're diabetic, if you're trying to lose weight, that's the thing. Don't eat red meat, but eat what? Guess what? The most polluted meat you can buy on the market is chicken. They actually pump sodium into the chicken.
Oh my gosh.
Before you buy it. And that little rotisserie chicken that you get at Costco and you think, oh, well, this is a healthy way. I'm sorry. No.
Yep, that's gone.
It's gone. No. So this comes as bad news to a lot of people, but try it for one day, try it for a week, try it for 3 weeks, whatever you can do. And here's what you're going to find. You're going to find that right now you're going, well, what's left to eat?
Well, I know what's left, the good stuff.
The good stuff is left to eat. And the recipes that I have in my book are things, you know what a smoothie is. Everybody knows what a smoothie is. And a smoothie is also a great secret weapon. It's a way to get dark greens and good mm-hmm. vegetables into your little guts a couple times a day if you want to.
Right.
If you ate nothing but smoothies, you'd be okay if you want to, if you're eating alone and you don't want people to see. But you can sneak peas and arugula and chard and all kinds of crazy stuff into a smoothie. And if you put enough frozen cherries or frozen blackberries in it, nobody, kids included, will ever know there was anything green in that smoothie. Delicious.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I noticed too, at different points where we went grocery shopping recently and I was just craving spinach and beets. And I thought, and when you get that, like the whole grocery store is there, all the options are there. But I was like honing in on the spinach and the beets. And I understand that, I'm not truly a vegetarian. I do eat fish and chicken until now.
sorry.
But I do find that if I crave anything, it's vegetables. And, we found a market, local market that sells all the produce and it's so nice to go, frequently to buy the fresh veggies and fruit. When you have a lot of produce like that, you tend to gravitate to eat it more because it doesn't last forever.
That's
and so
right.
You're always forced to do that turnover. There's always a replenishing of it. It's not, I know it's not normal. Just, I know when I talk to people, they're like, it's all you eat are vegetables. And I'm thinking, yeah. And I don't even, the fruit, in a smoothie is fine, but I don't like pick up a piece of fruit during the day. If I'm going to have it, it'll be in a smoothie. And the rest of the time it's vegetables. So I have more of a savory thing that I go toward, but yeah, that's kind of the, and then cheese, I got to work on that one. Uh-huh. But
okay. Well, let me give you a tip. If you haven't tried this, a thing that I crave now and is part of our diet every day, pretty much, is nutritional yeast flakes.
I have
bad
them.
Name. It's a terrible name.
I know, but I have them.
Yeah. And those, they have a salty Parmesan cheesy kind mm-hmm. of a flavor. And I eat them on all kinds of things. And they're absolutely delicious. And also, they are 8 grams of protein for 2 tablespoons. So think, people often ask me, how do you get enough protein in your diet eating mm-hmm. the way you do? And that's a way I do, just habitually. It's a wonderful seasoning. I throw it on top of stuff and there, boom, protein. And in the book, I talk about a number of tips for using up your vegetables because that, yes, after 3, 4, 5 days, some of them start looking kind of tired mm-hmm. in the fridge. And there's a recipe called Genius Soup that is one that people over the years have said to me, oh my gosh, that changed my life in the kitchen. And it's kind of like the French or Italian grandma's secret. And it's a base of celery, onions, and carrots chopped and you mm-hmm. saute. And then you add some tomatoes of any form, if you have them fresh, if you have a can, if you have a box, if you have a jar from the farmer's market, some tomatoes are good. And then you add broth, vegetable broth in my case. And then you take all those greens, the chard, the cabbage, the arugula, the spinach, anything that you have laying around in the bottom of your fridge that is getting tired, you chop it and you throw it in the soup. And it doesn't matter how much. It doesn't matter.
Right.
You don't have to measure this stuff. Just throw it in the soup and it makes the most delicious base. It's great pretty much on its own, but you can then poach fish in it. You can mm-hmm. throw pasta, beans in it. Mm-hmm. There's a whole list of things that you can do so that you have a different thing every night if you want to, just from that soup base. And having that soup base has given you all the vegetables anybody needs. They're there. All your greens are in the soup. And it's also, it's fast, it's easy. And then you freeze it in jars, leave space at the top so they don't blow up. But you freeze a meal's worth of it. You pull that out of the freezer, you nuke it, you know, or you run hot and you put it in a pan. And there's another meal already.
Right. I like so that. Easy. Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm. So easy. Well, and you can caramelize vegetables in a broiler or in an oven so easily. Mm-hmm. And especially I like to use our iron pans, our cast iron pans, and you throw chopped, chunked, that's a better word. It's not really chopped, but chunked cauliflower with mm-hmm. chopped red, yellow pepper. And again, this is whatever you have. Mm-hmm. Asparagus works a lot of it, and your cabbage, Brussels sprouts works, and you a little bit of oil brushed on them. Great. If you really don't want that oil for some reason, don't put it on, but put it in there and let them caramelize in the pan, brown really good. And they are delicious. Absolutely great. You can do it with sweet potatoes.
Yes.
So many things. And again, that sprinkle of salt. And especially, I recommend something, I use two different salts that make a big difference in your kitchen. One is smoky salt, and there are different brands, but it would be a smoked flavor salt. And then the
good.
Other one is a truffle salt. So you take either one of those or both and sprinkle a little bit on something like these vegetables. And I mean, wow. All of a sudden, you think some chef in some San Francisco restaurant made this, and all you've done is sprinkle a little bit of something on top of it. And there's not enough sodium in that to even register.
It's not so much what you're putting on food to season it. It's what's in it to begin with.
Yes.
That's the harmful part.
Yes, yes, yes. So we've given up sugar. We've given up chicken, right, Lori?
Yep.
We've given up. What else have we given up? We've given up dairy. We've given up most red meat, unless you know the first name of that critter, you know, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But what's left is all the color and all the texture that you could possibly want. And now there are all these wonderful new things on the market that I'm having fun experimenting with, because we are not the only people trying hard to eat well. There are vegan cream cheeses that are made out of vegetables. There are dips made out of vegetables. There are all kinds of things made out of beans that nobody ever thought of before. I am baking, and in my book, the title being Brownies for Breakfast, the brownies are made of pumpkin and cocoa, regular old just chocolate and regular old pumpkin, just like you have in a can, and an egg substitute, and what else? Baking soda, some stuff. Totally simple. But pumpkin as a baked good has this magic ability to substitute for flour and oil. And it makes...
I love pumpkin.
Yes, but it makes the most amazing baked goods. And if you put a healthy dose of dark chocolate, real cocoa with it, you don't even taste the pumpkin. Mm-hmm. What you're tasting is the best brownie you ever ate. There's a little cinnamon in my brownie, but... I love to have people experiment and play with this and put it in front of people. Don't ever tell the people you're serving that there is no sugar in it and no flour in it.
Yeah, because they'll have a preconceived notion.
Absolutely, they will. But these are the best brownies you may have ever had, and they last for days. And the pumpkin has a magic to it where it actually absorbs moisture instead of loses moisture. And so these brownies, after 3-4 days in the fridge, although I dare you to not eat them, right?
Yeah, have them last that long, right?
Yeah, it's not easy to have them last, but after 3-4 days in the fridge, they're better than they were when you put them in the fridge. They freeze really well. Well, the other thing that's in this book is donuts, right? Mm. I mean, it actually is the most popular pastry in the country. That's not probably a big surprise, but these donuts are a meal, actually a healthy meal. So if you have a 5-year-old that's rushing off to kindergarten, whatever, and you want them to have a little breakfast, but you want it to be a substantial breakfast, and you wave a pink frosted donut with sprinkles on it in front of them, guess what? They're going to eat it.
Yeah, they will. Yeah.
And they're going to love it. They don't need to know what it's made of. And you've made it with no sugar, no oil. Well, actually, you've greased your donut pan. You've baked the donuts. And there's a little bit of coconut oil that you use to grease the pan. But other than that, it's super healthy food. It's great food. It's vegan. And it is high in protein and fiber and everything you want your kid or your 85-year-old dad mm-hmm. or yourself to have. It's great food.
It's guilt-free. I mean, you have, like you were saying, when you're eating the healthy stuff, there aren't the parameters there are when you're eating a standard diet. It's endless because what you're doing is feeding yourself so much nutrients and it fills that void and you don't have to worry about the calories because it's vegetables. It's not all the carbs and all the cheese right. and all that. It's just so much different of a mindset to have.
Well, and if we went on the TV, and we don't have a TV either, but if you and I teamed up to do an ad for these donuts, we would be saying, you can't even eat three. Because what happens is when it's good food, when it's actually nutritious, your body goes, okay, that was great. Thanks. Enough.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a huge difference from the way most of your food is designed, isn't it? People who have been struggling with weight, I'm thrilled that therapists who work with bulimic people have given my book a good review. And that delights me because people's relationship with food to a great degree is because of the quality of the food that they've been eating.
Mm.
When you allow yourself mentally and physically to eat high quality food, it changes not only your saliva, we've talked about that, but it changes your relationship with food. If you mm-hmm. sit down to a table full of green and yellow and pink and red and orange and beautiful foods with beautiful fragrance and textures, and you say to yourself, well, I'm going to eat whatever I want, and with no, yeah, and I get to eat whatever I want, suddenly now, not only is the food healthy, but your relationship with that food becomes mm-hmm. healthy. That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a message in the back of your mind when you're eating the ice cream that you shouldn't be eating it.
Right.
That's the psychology of that is, you know, that's
it's huge.
That's yeah.
And there are so many of us for various reasons that have this, you know, maybe there was some deprivation in their childhood for some reason that they went hungry at some point. Hunger is a very basic thing. And your wiring can get messed up about that. Mm-hmm. And you can spend the rest of your life wanting to eat too much because you have this terror of hunger.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in my own life, I had a bit of that. And part of that was this fear of the diabetes and we were told to never go hungry. We were told to eat all day back in the day, which isn't the way it's taught these days. But now even what I recommend for people and what I practice myself is kind of the Ayurvedic way, which a lot of Western medicine is adapting, which is stop eating. Stop eating 4 or 5 in the afternoon. Eat what you want all day or 2 times a day or whatever, but stop eating at 4 or 5 in the afternoon and let your body do what it needs to do, which most of us don't allow our bodies to do, which is in the pictorial I have for you is that when you finish eating at the end of the day and the sun is lowering and the day is shortening, your repair team comes out.
Hmm.
The cellular work that needs to go on in your body when you sleep. And you only heal when you sleep, by the way, in deep sleep. That's when your body heals. If you have asked your body to keep on digesting, if you've powered down that bag of Doritos or whatever at 10, 11 o'clock at night, even 8 o'clock at night, had a drink, whatever, ice cream. Now the repair crew is like, dang, we can't, you know, they're still eating. They're still, the digestion crew is still busy. So the cellular repair crew can't go to work. So
interesting.
Yes. And again, this is, I'm talking in Dr. Seuss terms, but this is data science based stuff. that we need to allow our not only our bodies to rest, our muscles, but our cellular level stuff to rest. Your digestion needs to rest. You need to stop eating late in the day. And that's going to do a number of things for you. It's going to allow you to heal better. It's going to allow you to sleep better. And if you're interested in losing weight, trust me on this, that you will take off some pounds, because the food that you ingest late in the day is the food that turns to fat.
And how much time from the last meal you have before you go to bed and the following day should you allow for your body to have to do all this work, all this process?
Well, you see all kinds of articles now about intermittent fasting. And of course, the word fasting, I think, is a little scary and so on. The typical advice is 3 hours before you go to bed or before you go to sleep, you should quit eating. I think you should do what works for you, because we have these crazy schedules in our days. And so it's hard for a lot of people to take a break at 2 or 3 and eat a great meal. And it may be that you have to eat your bigger meal at 11 or 12 or whatever, and then you eat a small meal at 4 or 5. But I think you need to look outside, and if it's dark, right, you shouldn't be eating. In my case, it works well for me, something like 4 in the afternoon and I'm done. But I'm an early to bed type. I'm in bed at 8 or 9 o'clock.
And should you finish your day with any type of specific food? Like, I've heard the thought is to eat like a salad at the end of the day, because that would have the most cleansing property to it, to help flush your system out.
I won't argue that, but I'm the woman that just told you you couldn't eat Costco chicken anymore. And I've also said no cheese, no ice cream, no meat. I mean, oh my gosh. So I would say that within the parameters that we've already set, which means something healthy, end your day with something healthy to eat, start your day with something healthy to eat. And if what you really want is the donut you made from my recipe at 4 in the afternoon, eat it, eat 2 of them. If you still want to eat 3 of them, it's okay. As long as you're not eating crap. That needs to be the rule. No crap. The more you do this, the more you'll want that salad. And also, as you were saying, you can trust your body to go, you know, I really want a salad. That sounds good. But if your body wants soup, great. You know, if your body wants a piece of fruit, great. You're not eating a bag of Doritos. You're not having a Big Mac. And you are way ahead of the game, way, way ahead. So that's all right. The food information that you get should agree with your good sense. And it should be science-based if you can possibly find the science around it. There's so much crud circulating on the internet about food, you know, kind of fatty stuff about food. And I'm a grandma, right? I know stuff. It's the stuff we're talking about here today is all really old, common sense kind of stuff. And that it's kind of where paleo came from. Let's eat how our ancestors ate. Well, you know what? Your ancestors weren't chasing animals down all the time. I got news for you. They were in the forest picking leaves and eating mushrooms and things. And so in a way, I agree that we should eat what has always been real food, but that skews heavily to the green and orange and pink and red in food.
Yeah, I think so too.
And if you read lists that are kind of peer-reviewed lists of the healthiest things to eat, the stuff that pops up at the top, blackberries, blueberries, you know, and what's the most delicious food you can eat? Blackberries, right? Blueberries. Yeah. And of course, greens, dark greens. If you're still laughing at people about eating arugula or rocket lettuce, try some. It's really good.
It is good.
And you don't know how good it is until you chop it and sniff it. And the fragrance that comes from some of these plant foods that you may not be totally familiar with, they're like perfume. And what that should tell you is that nature is trying to get you to eat this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, like, my favorite is basil and cilantro. Those are my two.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Yeah.
And
yummies.
So interesting that some people absolutely can't abide cilantro.
I know.
There's something chemical in there that they just can't do. But I love it and eat a lot of it. But basil, heavenly. So wonderful. And then, as you know, I talk a lot about growing your own food. And I'm a big believer, even if you've got a boat or a little tiny galley, a kitchen.
I have a basil plant.
They see, you can have some parsley, you can have some basil, you can have all kinds of herbs growing in little tiny pots. And they're beautiful. They smell great. They make your house smell good. And they make your food better. So
I even got into microgreens. I still have, I just love the flavor of the, it's just a totally, it tastes like what it is, but it has a whole different thing to it. And I really was enjoying that too.
And they're cute.
Yes,
they make things look pretty, which, you know, go ahead and laugh at me, but I like to put a plate on the table that says, eat me now. You know, that.
Yes.
I love for my friends to go, oh, that's so beautiful.
The presentation. Yes.
Yes.
I'm about that.
It is so easy to do, really, is just to take an extra few seconds and think about how it looks on the plate, because that's part of the process of enjoying your food. And I want you to enjoy your food. I want all of us to enjoy our food. And then I love it when people meet me or see my photographs or whatever, in spite of the way we Photoshop everything, and it's kind of like a I'll have what she's having moment, because it shows.
Yeah.
It shows when you are putting good stuff in your body. You can see it on people, and you can see when they're not.
Yes. There's definitely the emphasis on the quality and what they eat and how they take care of themselves,
right,
as opposed to the people who are stuck in some bad habits and
right,
and how that's harming them. So,
and you can call it an elitist thing if you want to, but to me, it's, you know, our bodies are one instrument. They're what we have. And
well, it's not like you can trade it in. I mean,
no,
you can, this is it. This is the one.
This is the one. And what started me on the journey all so many, many years ago was seeing my mother, who had a chronic disease. She couldn't help it. It was kidney disease. But she died when I was 18. And after having been ill for many years. And so I had an up-close personal training on what chronic disease does to a family.
Mm-hmm.
And it can destroy a family financially as well as physically. And my dad, you know, was ruined. He had to sell our house, and we gave the dog away, and I dropped out of college and all those things. And we see this happening more and more and more all the time, because chronic disease, particularly, it doesn't just hurt you. It hurts everyone around you. And it's preventable. It's preventable. And it's also, in many cases, reversible. So, you know, think about it.
Right.
If eating that Big Mac is worth it to you, well, you've made that decision. But you now have, if you didn't have up to this point, the information on which to make that decision.
Sure.
And when you decide to put crap in your body, to eat really unhealthful things, you are throwing the dice, not just for yourself, but for everyone you love.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, that's true. It's true. And there's nothing that can force you to do it. That's, you have to make the decision as to what is important and how that's going to play out, and hope that, like, this conversation makes somebody take notice and really think, this is the sign I needed to do what I need to do to be healthier, to protect my family, to make a better life, to live longer, to, you know, eliminate a lot of the issues that you're experiencing now. And it's now. Now's the time to do these things. It's not next year, after the first of the year. I know it's always like a great thing, start the new year, but start now. It's so worth doing something now.
And I tell this story at the beginning of the book because it was what made me actually sit down and do the book. My youngest daughter is a nurse practitioner, and we text all the time. And She texted me that she had treated a vet. Her dad was a vet. And she said, he's about your age. And I've just been in his room preparing him for amputation of his legs. And because he's a diabetic.
Mm.
And he said to, and I said to him that my mom is working on a book about diabetes and she's kind of, you know, she's kind of stuck on it, but she's working on it. And he said, my daughter tells me with tears in his eyes, he said, please, for me, tell your mom to write that book, please.
Oh, wow.
And it's an illustration of the fact that until you don't know particularly that you're a diabetic until you've done that kind of severe damage. And I don't want anybody there. I want you to go and get a hemoglobin A1C test. Everyone should be tested when they do their yearly checkup or whatever. And you men, you're the worst. You won't go because you think you're strong and you're going to live forever.
Invincible.
And we love that about you. But please get your silly asses to the doctor and get the blood test that you need. So get your hemoglobin A1C and see where your blood glucose is. Because if it's over the line, you need to change some behaviors mm-hmm. or you are going to be in, you're going to be on dialysis all the time, or you're going to be in that hospital bed getting prepped to have your fingers, your toes, your legs taken off. You will lose your sight as a result of not knowing you have diabetes. So
yes, be proactive.
Yes. Yeah. And then if nothing else, you have bragging rights. You can say, yeah, I had my blood test. I'm great. I'm perfect. I love that about you.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
That's good. Yes.
That's good. But you don't know that till you go.
You do it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Aww.
Yeah.
Well, that is a very inspirational and powerful story. And that's a great point for people to have the understanding of how important it is. It's the overall how much does it affect your health and how does it spiral out to the point where, you know, you are in a hospital because of it and all the things you can do proactively to avoid that. So
yes.
Thank you for all this. You've been a wonderful and inspirational guest with all the different alternatives. And it's not taking things away so much as replacing or understanding better what you need to do. And like I said, start now.
Yes. And I'm really sorry about your Costco chicken.
It's okay.
And I hope I don't get calls from lawyers about it.
No, you'll be fine. Well, thank you, Lynn. It's been marvelous talking to you. I can't wait to try the brownie recipe because you got me really intrigued now because I love all the ingredients. So I know it's going to be good, but I'll send you a little review and let you know how everything turned out.
Super. Thank you.
Oh, you're wonderful. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Lynn's colorful and charismatic personality pairs well with the food she eats. Perhaps it's another benefit to following her lead. She is full of energy and continues to be active in truly living her life. Remember the secret recipe for reversing chronic disease, looking and feeling better, and creating those sustainable health habits is her holistic approach using whole and plant-based foods and the practical way of eating. Her recipes are low-carb, gluten-free, super nutritious recipes everybody in the family will like and anybody can make. Just when you thought your favorites were out, Lynn redesigned them without all the bad stuff. Her book, Brownies for Breakfast, is beautifully photographed and filled with easy-to-follow recipes to drool over. You can find out more about Lynn on her website at lynnbowman.com. You can find her book, Brownies for Breakfast, a cookbook for diabetics and the people who love them, on Amazon. The links will be in the episode description. Please let me know if there's anything that was discussed in this episode that rings true for you or someone you care about. Your feedback helps me to understand better how I can help you in the future. If you'd like to share your experience or know of an organization to help, even just one person, please message me through my website or social media at Sailing Through Life Podcast. I would be thrilled to hear from you. How do you sail through life? Join me on this endeavor. I would love to grow this caring support community. Your support is what makes this possible. You can support the show by following, reviewing, and sharing it. Make a contribution. That helps us reach more listeners and makes their stories matter. It will help me grow the show and continue my passion to reach others with my messages of hope and empowerment. Please visit my website to find out more at sailingthroughlifepodcast.wordpress.com. Thanks again. Chat with you next time.